is out. Folding up his presidential run, what does the looming election mean for farmers? Meanwhile, trade continues to garner attention while the heat is on, but will rain cool things down? All that and plenty more today on AgriTalk.
Live from beneath an overcast July sky via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with meteorologist Tom Downs from Weatherbell Analytics. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Michelle Jones and Tim Recker. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, wielding the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk in Chipstead, from Ag Day Television, the hot stepper, Clinton Griffith! How you doing, baby?
I'm doing pretty good. Wow, what a welcome. What a welcome. So excited to be here. Thank you, everybody.
The studio audience is super psyched.
They are all social distancing, 6 feet away, just in case anybody was wondering. Oh, my gosh. What a day. Hey, Davis, yesterday we talked quite a bit about a big buy, you know, a historic buy from China on corn.
Yeah.
Export sales numbers out again today. 389,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to China for next marketing year. We also had another export sale of corn, 132,000 metric tons for China the next marketing year. So that's continuing to keep this conversation around trade and this phase one trade deal, on fire, seeing if we're going to get there. Well, I think that's what everybody's watching, the big board. Are we going to get there?
Yes, yes. And the big board failed to deliver yesterday on an enormoid record corn sale to China, December futures down 3. We'll see how maybe a little bit more tempered approach to these sales treats the market. Maybe we'll, the less we sell, the higher we go. I don't know. Maybe. It could work.
It could work. What's backwards is forwards. I'm happy to be filling in for Chip here for a couple days on AgriTalk while he's out, doing a little fishing out there in the big blue yonder somewhere. And sounds like maybe he's getting a little bit of rain today. So
From Chip just a little while ago.
Yeah.
Beloved listeners, he misses you horribly. It almost sounds like he's beginning to regret his time away from the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk. He'll be back on Monday, but
we've all made decisions we regret, Davis. We won't get into that today.
Fair statement.
It could be a long show. All right, well, let's start with some news and maybe what else is going on in the world.
Right on, Clinton. Well, stock indices brushed off rising tensions with China, which we'll detail in a bit here. But U.S.-based Moderna reports encouraging results in early coronavirus vaccine trials. The vaccine reportedly produced a safe immune response in all 45 healthy volunteers in the study. The government's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said in a larger study that it could lead to definitive results by the end of the year. Public health officials believe it may take a wide range of vaccines to subdue the virus. This as reported cases and hospitalizations rise in the southeastern portion of the United States. Clinton.
Well, I think this really is what it's going to take to get people comfortable, to get society moving in a what do we want to call normal, somewhat normal direction. We're going to have some of the science kick in, right? We're going to have a vaccine. We're going to have something that works, until that's proven, until we can get there. I think we're kind of into the status quo of, around us, we're still having things get canceled, practices and schools and things being postponed and different events. I mean, it's hard to see that changing if we continue to see the infection rates the way they are.
Yeah, and the dogs are freaking out suddenly. Just to update you, the Dow Jones up 356 to 26.8. S&P up 40. NASDAQ up 69.75 on the morning so far today. So
you better put on your foil hat and go check the front door.
I guess, man. Maybe my Amazon stuff is here. Fed Governor Lael Brainard delivered remarks online suggesting the U.S. economy still faces substantial risks from the jarring impacts of COVID-19. Brainard noted the recent improvements in the economy are attributable to, quote, rapid and sizable fiscal support, saying the fiscal support will remain vital. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi remarked she may delay a planned August recess to pass a coronavirus relief bill. This, as Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell expects to unveil a Senate package, which would include heightened legal protections for small businesses, schools, and other entities. And those heightened legal protections, I think, are going to be equally as important as a vaccine. Clinton?
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, a lot of what, you know, a lot of the things that are happening as far as, you know, how cautious people are being is really around the liability issue, right? And and we don't want anybody to get sick. We don't want anybody to have any, you know, any problems with the virus, obviously. But, you know, as a business or as a school or what have you, liability is obviously a big part of the whole equation. So I expect that to move forward. We'll see what happens, but I don't see anything holding that up. As far as some liability protection moving forward.
Well, Clinton, the Trump administration has decided to end preferential treatment measures for Hong Kong amid tightening Chinese control over the formerly semi-autonomous state. The president said, quote, Hong Kong will now be treated the same as mainland China. No special privileges, no special economic treatments, and no export of sensitive technologies. The president has signed the Hong Kong Autonomy Act, which empowers sanctions on businesses and individuals that contribute to the erosion of Hong Kong's sovereignty. A statement from the Chinese Foreign Ministry remarked Trump's decision is a violation of international norms and a serious interference with China's internal affairs. Now, let's add this to that. The administration is also considering a round of sanctions relative to the dispute simmering in the South China Sea. David Stilwell, the Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia, said, quote, this is a language the Chinese understand, demonstrative and tangible action. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo lauded a U.K. decision to ban Chinese telecom giant Huawei from its 5G wireless networks on national security grounds. That's a measure Beijing called disappointing and wrong. Clinton.
Well, it seems like it does feel like we're headed to a little more tense relationship. Obviously, we had a couple big sales on the trade front, but, you know, this relationship's far from cordial both ways. So I think that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on as we go through the rest of 2020 and see what happens. Hey, appreciate it.
We're going to do exactly that, brother. Yep.
Davis, appreciate the news. Thank you so much. Let's go ahead and flip over to Margie Echocamp. She's the editor of the newly named The Scoop. And Margie, thanks for joining us. There's some new products out there that, you know, some of the folks in the retail industry are taking a hard look at.
Yeah, Clinton, good morning. I think I'm here to deliver some good news.
Hey, all right. I like that.
Some welcome news, and that is neutral tools and the herbicide.
Okay, start again. I couldn't hear you over the crowd.
That's okay. Davis brought his posse. New tools in the herbicide toolbox, and that is Helm is looking to bring to market Revaton. This is a PPO inhibitor herbicide that is currently under EPA regulatory review. It features a new novel molecule discovered by a Korean agrochemical company and was jointly developed as a commercial product with ISK, a Japanese chemical company that Helm is bringing to the market here in the U.S. The launch expected later this year following all the federal and state registrations, but for use in field corn, cotton, soybeans, and wheat. The burn down herbicide is targeting over 50 weed species.
Oh, wow.
And we were able to have an early interview with Helm leadership. The full article is available on agprofessional.com as well as AgWeb, and we will continue to monitor new products and new solutions as they're coming into the market.
Getting the scoop with Margie Echocamp. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Big news indeed. All right, everybody, stick with us. We're going to have more AgriTalk coming up here in just a couple moments.
Solving the soil health puzzle? La Crosse Seed has you covered. Get started today at lacrosseseed.com/partner or call 800-356-SEED.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Well, as we've been talking this week, a little bit of heat out there, especially in the southern part of the country. Davis expected to sweat through his tank top at any moment. Should be another hot day in different parts of the nation. Here to help us sort through some of the weather and weather trends that we could expect this month and maybe over the next couple. Let's bring on Tom Downs. He's a meteorologist with WeatherBell Analytics. Tom, thank you so much for joining us here on AgriTalk. Really appreciate it. So talk to us about the system and the environment we're in right now here. Obviously, mid-July, we expect a little heat.
Yes, it's definitely come as advertised, right? It's July, the hottest time of the year is right as we're in right now. So it's to be expected, but we do see, as everybody knows, there's a lot of variability from year to year. And this year, we're just seeing some of the hottest temperatures we've seen in a while, especially down in the southern plains.
Right.
That's kind of really going to be the epicenter of the major heat over the next week.
Do we expect this maybe heat dome to stick around and kind of hold that temperature in here for several weeks at a time?
Yeah, so the next week is, and there's going to be a couple different things going on right now.
Okay.
So we kind of had a little bit of a warm stretch in most of the Corn Belt, you know, over the last week or so, and it's kind of back down a tad. And as you go back down to the southwest there, into the southern plains, especially Oklahoma, Kansas, and into North Texas, that's where you're going to see those triple-digit heat readings coming out. As we go through the next week or so, especially starting this weekend, Saturday especially on Sunday, we'll see the 90s throughout most of the Corn Belt and really extending from the plains all the way eastward to the Ohio Valley.
What about the overnight lows? Because we're talking some of these cornfields, that can tend to be one of the biggest issues is if it doesn't cool off
yep.
at night. We can handle the hot temperature, but if it doesn't cool off at night with the high humidity and heat, that can be a real issue. How's that looking?
We're actually not looking too bad there. I mean, it depends on your perspective, right? As long as you get down into the 70s usually, low 70s, you know, we should see most areas get down that low. The humidity isn't going to be too crazy. We're going to see those dew point readings that's a measure of the moisture in the air. And anytime we get above 70, it's oppressive out. And those readings should be hovering around the upper 60s to low 70s, especially during the morning hours. And you know, what that leads to typically, you know, it's a pollination this time of year, right?
That's right.
big time of year. So, I mean, we're really talking about a few hours in the morning where, you know, when pollination is at its greatest, we're talking a decent amount of a cooler temperatures. We're not going to see those 90-degree readings at 10 o'clock in the morning. They'll be more in the middle to later parts of the afternoon.
Talk to me a little bit about, obviously, we'll have a drought monitor come out tomorrow. We continue to see a little bit of an expansion in some areas with the drought monitor,
sure.
But we're also getting some pop-up showers now in different places. How do you think that kind of stacks up here through the rest of the month?
Well, you know, this is the typical pop-up shower and thunderstorm regime that everybody either benefits from or hates, because, you know, you can have your neighbor down the road have heavy rain and you're hung out to dry. And so we're seeing that a lot in many places, especially in the central Corn Belt.
Mm-hmm.
When you head to southwestern Iowa in those areas, it's been a little bit more challenging. I mean, it's been a lot more drought over the last 30 days. Those areas have seen a lot more more recent dryness. And as you head to the northwest, you know, into Nebraska and South Dakota in those areas, they're starting to see an increase in moisture. So as we head to look into the future a little bit more for the next, you know, 2 weeks to 3 weeks, we start to see it's a little complicated, but you have you may have heard of the southwest monsoon
uh-huh.
that hits Arizona and California. That actually is a huge stream of moisture that actually winds up going over the Rocky Mountains and affecting a lot of the central U.S. And really that has been delayed this year. So I think that's partially why we're seeing this delay of rain, of moisture moving through.
Mm.
And we're not really going to see anything in terms of a change in pattern for a good week to 10 days. But there are signs that that's going to be changing. So I would think that by the time we head later into July, the pattern's going to switch up just a little bit.
You know, one of the things you guys do there, WeatherBell, is you tend to forecast, you look a little further out. As we go a month or 2 months, 3 months out, what is that starting to shape up like weather-wise? Because obviously we got to get through the heat, we got to get through pollination, but, you know, we need rain showers in August and we need some sort of harvest weather once you get to September and October.
Yeah, and that's going to be the challenge as we move forward. You know, what we're seeing now is kind of a warm trend to the harvest season. So that could a little bit, you know, by the time we get to late October, maybe we'll see a cool down, maybe a cooler regime. We do think there's going to be a warmer than normal pattern. And, I, we're not in a situation like last year where we needed every growing degree day toward the end of the season to make sure that the
right.
crops matured. That's kind of the distinction here. And, you know, I think this year is going to be more of a precipitation focus. You know, do we have enough dry weather to harvest? And you know, that's always the key question. And as you're talking about, temperature patterns are a little bit easier to forecast than precipitation. But we do think that the one thing that's really sticking out to us over the next 3 months is going to be a tropical activity. So especially areas from, you know, the Gulf of Mexico north and eastward, and you know, basically east of the Mississippi, those areas will have to watch out for some drenching rains from some tropical activity. And don't forget, you know, while we think of the tropics as something to worry to watch in September, they do tend to stick around into October. So if you have parts of the eastern Corn Belt especially are vulnerable to some of those heavier showers as we head deeper into October from some of these systems coming up. So that's what we're looking at, because we do expect a very, very active hurricane season coming up in the Atlantic Basin.
You know, I've heard that. I've heard that from several different folks. Sounds like they're expecting that to really kick off. What's driving that trend toward a more active than normal hurricane season?
Well, we do have quite warm surface waters in the Atlantic Ocean and off the Gulf Coast, but also we're kind of in a stagnant pattern globally. So believe it or not, you know, we've had a very fast start to the Atlantic hurricane season. We've seen six named storms already, but relatively speaking, they've been very, very weak, and they've only lasted a little bit. So we had just had Fay move up the eastern seaboard the other day, last Friday. But, you know, aside from that, we've had hit or miss smaller storms. We really start to see the African wave train, what we call it, start to mature as we head into later July. And that should start to spawn a few storms as we head by the first week of August. We should start to see some of those storms well out in the Atlantic that we can take a week or two to track to see where they go. But elsewhere, believe it or not, around the globe, the Western Pacific Ocean, they've had a record low amount of activity. Eastern Pacific Ocean, very, very inactive. So it's really the Atlantic Basin and the entire Northern Hemisphere that's had most of these storms. And it's just because we're kind of in this stagnating global pattern right now that happens from year to year, but it just so happens that we're stagnating right over in the Atlantic Basin to have that activity.
Interesting. We're talking with Tom Downs. He's a meteorologist with Weather Bell Analytics. Tom, I know one of the things that we try to watch every year for some sort of prediction as farmers, you know, we're looking not just, you know, a month ahead. We're trying to look 6-8 months ahead. What are we looking at as far as El Nino, La Nina? Is it too early to talk about, you know, how that's going to develop through the winter and into next year? Or what are we seeing?
Yeah, sure. So the La Nina is going to be what we're going to be talking about. You know, El Nino, we kind of put in our rearview mirror for a while. And we always talk about, it seems like every year, right? We're talking about El Nino, La Nina.
Right,
and
right.
Very rarely do we talk about a neutral year. But typically speaking, you know, what we see this time of year is that big global system of El Nino, La Nina that starts to evolve. And right now we're seeing the trend for more toward a La Nina. And what that means for interest here in North America is not necessarily something that's uniform, right? We hear, you know, it's been a while since we had a significant La Nina back, you go early part about 10 years ago or so, about early part of the last decade. And you did see some dry conditions there, but the dry conditions that happened in 2011, 2012, those areas, of course, you remember 2012, everybody remembers then. It was, you know, they weren't necessarily spawned only by La Nina. There are other factors that get involved. So just because we see a La Nina develop potentially this winter really doesn't mean one thing or the other for most areas of the country. One exception might be along the southern area. So from Texas to the Gulf Coast or up the Gulf Coast, they might see a drier winter, which could have impacts as we head into spring.
Sure, absolutely. Hey, we've got just a minute or so here. Tom, tell folks how they can find what you guys do and where they can keep up with you guys.
Yeah, so if you visit weatherbell.com and check out our website there, we have a whole ag section that we do different types of forecasts for. Our main focus is for growers and traders, but growers are especially are kind of a growing aspect of our business. And we have these, basically, me and another meteorologist, Joe DeLeo, old-timer in the industry, we do a weekly video that describes, you know, what's going on with the weather maps and walk everybody through, and we accept questions. So people call in, or not call in, they email us questions, and we address those questions on those videos. So the more the merrier there, so that we can really get a feel of how many people you know, what they're seeing out there and what's important to everybody in the growing areas, especially.
Yeah, it is always interesting to try to keep up with what's happening weather-wise. And, of course, we're all looking ahead trying to say, okay, we know what today's going to be, but what's it going to be in another week or 2 weeks? Really appreciate the insight, Tom. Thank you so much. Tom Downs, a meteorologist there with WeatherBell Analytics. All right, everybody, want to stick with us here on AgriTalk. We're going to check markets with the folks over at Pro Farmer and Brian Grady coming up here in just a minute. And then we're going to have our Farmer Forum with Michelle Jones, Tim Recker. They'll be joining us here on AgriTalk. I hope everybody's having a great morning. Stick with us. We're going to be right back.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Hey, welcome back. We've got Brian Grady from over Pro Farmer with a check of our markets. How are we doing today, Brian?
Well, Clinton, you know, the corn market, it's a struggle to find buyers again. We were higher at points overnight. That faded late into the overnight session. And then we started daytime trade under some pressure. But the, you know, strong gains in the wheat market, some strength in the soybean market has us trading narrowly mixed here mid-morning. So maybe some signs that the corn market's seeing some buyer interest underneath the market. We did have another daily sale to China this morning of corn, and we also had daily sales of soybeans to China this morning. So you know, the Chinese interest in the market is at least underpinning soybeans and may indicate that or should indicate that the Chinese see value at current price levels in the corn market.
Yeah, if we're talking about on the livestock side of things, how are we faring today?
Well, cattle market, the past 2 days gave us some pause in terms of the price action because, you know, we either pushed above or didn't quite get there above the May highs in the live cattle contracts, and then we pulled back. But big, strong rebound today, moderate to strong gains in most of the contracts there. So that's encouraging, and I think, you know, lends itself to maybe that short-term tops aren't in place quite yet. We have seen cash cow trade at about steady prices with week ago so far, although it's a pretty light test at this point. Hog market, narrowly mixed price action, and quite honestly, not a whole lot going on. The front end of the market is a little bit firmer. Back end is a little bit weaker. And July hogs expire at noon Central Time today. So that's something that to watch moving forward here.
All right. Always appreciate it. Thank you, Brian. We'll be back.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Hey, welcome back to AgriTalk. And again, this segment, our Farmer Forum, brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. It amplifies the stewardship journey of farmers and many conservation agriculture programs and activities underway across America. This year alone, farmers can expect to benefit from conservation ag stories, information, and resources, including hundreds of pages in print, TV spots, radio segments about topics including economic ROI of conservation, the how-to of soil health, water quality, wildlife habitat, and much more. To learn more, go over to agweb.com/ACAM. All right, well, let's kick off our Farmer Forum. We've got two great guests today. We've got Michelle Jones and Tim Recker. Thank you both for joining us. And I guess, Tim, let's start with you. How are things holding up as far as weather goes?
Well, it's a great day in Northeast Iowa. You know, I think about this year, and it's really been a typical growing year and probably a very untypical type of environment. So we're looking at, you know, finishing up some cleanup work that we've been waiting all summer to do, cleaning up some waterways and assessing the crop and getting ready to make our next big decision of whether we put fungicides on or not. So it's a typical summertime growing, and we've had adequate moisture. We've had, unfortunately, some pretty heavy winds and rain through Northeast Iowa and hail. And so there's some concerns with this corn crop that's right, probably 30 to 40% tasseling, that some of it blew down pretty bad in the last 2 weeks. And hopefully that's uprights itself and can pollinate normally. So that's kind of the lowdown of what's going on in Northeast Iowa.
Well, anything normal would be great, right? Given what 2020 has brought us. Michelle, how about in Montana? How are things holding up? How's the wheat looking?
The wheat looks pretty good. I'm sitting in the baler right now. Hopefully the sound's all right.
You're good.
Currently feeling like a diva. I had my day very tightly scheduled that I did a TV segment a little bit ago, and then I was going to be in my baler at 9:10 for AgriTalk, and everything would be just fine. Except for my battery was dead, so my dad charged it for me, and I'm just sitting in the cab hanging out. Now he's going after hydraulic oil, so not nearly as smooth as I had imagined, but I'm here. And the crops look really good in our area. We've gotten by with timely rains. It hasn't been as wet as the last couple of years, but we're a couple of weeks out on harvest for wheat, and it looks really good, so we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, it sounds like wheat harvest is going to be on its way, working its way north right now. Sound like it's going okay. And Michelle, we've seen actually a little bit of rebound here in prices even during harvest. That giving you a little bit of hope and maybe a few sales here and there. That's not too bad.
Yeah, it has rebounded, especially in the last couple of weeks, which has been nice to see off those harvest lows. We marketed pretty aggressively back in March when it spiked there on the stay-at-home order demand, but we're definitely looking to see an increase now. It would be really nice, and especially as we go into the fall and we market the balance of what we haven't already marketed.
Tim, some of the stuff you've been working on, and I know Chip left me a note and said, hey, give us an update on the watershed. How's it going?
Yeah, so I built a 20-acre, along with all the other projects that went on this year, we built a 20-acre wetland. Chip came out and did a show, actually, on it before it was built, and I want him to come back and do another one. And the amazing thing about it is, because of the large, heavy rains, the thing worked just perfectly. In fact, it was just amazing to see. We had a 7-inch rain, a couple 3-inch rains. And this structure, this permanent conservation structure, was designed to be much like a bathtub, to expand when you have those big rains, to prevent the road from washing out, and to hold the water for a period of time and allow it to denitrify, let the sediment drop out, and before it continues to run downstream. And it's exactly what it did. It just is a little scary once the first 7-inch rain happened,
right?
On a brand new structure that wasn't even seeded yet. And we had water going over the weir. But everything held, everything worked just as it's designed. And so I'm pretty happy about that and all the other conservation practices that really helped out this year. We just had excessive one-time rains that we got plenty of 1-inch rains and 1.5, but we had plenty of 3, 4, 5, 7-inch rains, and those are the ones that do the devastating damage to our soil. And
right.
And luckily in this area we have plenty of waterways, terraces, buffer strips, and now this kind of new practice with the wetland. So we're trying to really hold water in its place and giving it time for Mother Nature to take care of it and slow it down.
Tim, is this something you did on your own, or is this something you had an incentive to do? How did you decide to take that on?
I'm one of the test bunnies in Iowa there's another person who built one similar. And so it was a fairly large project. It was put out for bids. It's a combination of funding through EQIP and the state IDOL, is the state of Iowa. And so with that combination of funding, they're looking at putting these wetlands. Their goal is to put a wetland in every county every year. And the projects are, they're fairly expensive. They can run anywhere from $200,000 to $250,000 per project. But they're really designed to hold, to protect anywhere from 500 to 1,500 acres of watershed. So it might seem like a lot of dollars up front, but when you look at the amount of acres it's protecting and the lifespan, which is around 100 years of this structure, then it really gets pretty economical the cost isn't so bad if you're looking at protecting nitrogen and sediment from getting down into the Mississippi.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I know, Michelle, this probably sounds like, a foreign country, you know, being a New Mexico kid myself, wetlands and watersheds and, that kind of stuff was not something we really had to deal with that much. But the conservation side of things, awful important. What are you seeing as far as momentum, or what are you hoping to see more of from that conservation stewardship side from your neck of the woods in Montana?
Well, in our neck of the woods, obviously, we're trying to keep the water. We don't have near the water issues that they have, obviously, out of the Midwest. And we've been enrolled in conservation stewardship program he's on the last year of his contract, so he's had 10 years now. And we've done a lot of stuff with different rotations and, work with cutting down on wind erosion. We use a stripper header for our cereal grains so we can keep as much residue and hold on to as much snow as possible. Mm. So that's a lot of the stuff that we look at and that we have been doing. It's fun to see all the research. In this area, cover crops are used considerably less. We tend to not use them just because they take too much water. But on the flip side, we also have gotten really into having alfalfa in our rotation as a more of a perennial cover crop. And it's done some excellent stuff for soil health. Obviously, it is a nitrogen fixer, as well as those deep roots do a lot to break up some soil compaction. So we've seen a lot of advances, a lot of changes in the last decade. We've come a long way from just a wheat fallow rotation.
You know, I always find it fascinating to see, how conservation is handled and talked about in different parts of the country, because everybody's farm is different, right? Everybody's got a different topography. They've got different soil types and different environmental issues that they're trying, from rainfall or what have you, that they're trying to work with. And we've found some really innovative ways to manage a lot of that. Michelle, I'll throw this first political question at you. What do you think, as we get toward an election here, how some of these types of programs may be part of the conversation?
I think that, certainly the conservation piece will continue to be an important part of the conversation. But I also think that, we need to remember to be a part of that conversation, to talk about how some of this stuff affects individual farms, why it has to be voluntary and why it has to be individual, because what works for Tim obviously is not going to work in Southeast Iowa. And then we have to talk about a lot of the benefits. We look at ethanol and the push to be carbon neutral and how important ethanol can be for the environmental piece, how having those higher blends is important, and the story that tells to be able to expand that, to keep that a crucial market for corn, and as well as everything else that we do. It's just important that we keep talking to these individual candidates, regardless of party. It doesn't matter what party they're in. But they have to, it helps to talk to actual farmers. It helps to talk to actual producers. And we have to have our voice to be able to guide their platforms, or they're going to go find information from places that we, quite frankly, don't want them to find information from, because it's not beneficial to production agriculture.
Tim, you agree with that?
I just want to take my hat off to Michelle. She said the magic words, and those words are voluntary conservation. Mm. So much of what I think could happen down the road is a regulatory approach. And to me, let the farmers in their area find innovative ways of how they can do conservation on their ground, because they know it the best. And that's what we've seen happen in this area. We've seen cover crops just blossom because we're in major seed corn growing area. And yeah, there was some incentives to get some guys away from tillage and doing cover crops. But now you see that as they adopt to those cover crops, you can just see the innovative ways that they're doing and things that have never been thought of before to make their cover crops work on their farms.
Yeah, it is a fascinating area to discuss, and I think we could talk about it in depth a lot longer. Hey, when we come back from this break, I want to pick both of your brains about some of the policy, some of the trade stuff going on. And of course, we have an election coming up. Get your thoughts on where we stand there. And of course, we'll wrap everything up with Davis coming up here as we finish another day of AgriTalk.
Thank you. America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Corteva for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Hi, welcome back to AgriTalk. Clinton Griffiths in for Chip Flory. Today we have a farmer forum going right now. We've got Michelle Jones, Tim Recker. Thank you both for being with us today. Let's talk a little bit more politics and some things going on. And I know, Tim, we'll talk to you about, obviously, Iowa's a hot campaign zone. Seems to be one of those states that I think the Biden campaign would like to do well in. What is on your radar as far as agriculture and, you know, the conversation around agriculture from both party platforms here?
Well, in the last 24 hours, I got a lot more knowledge about what his campaign is actually talking about with the coverage yesterday. You know, and so I have some concerns, but I actually think agriculture can come out well. I mean, he's talking about a carbon pollution free electricity by 2035, a carbon neutral by 2050. What does that mean for us? That's the key. What does that mean for ethanol? Mm. There's 5 billion bushels of corn that's being ground for ethanol. Where does ethanol fit into this carbon-free environment? I called it, you know, the New Green Deal, but Michelle kind of helped me and get it right. It's really not the New Green Deal. It's really a lighter version of that, but it's somewhat similar. And so I have some concerns. One of the things I did write down when he was talking to farmers and ranchers, what he was going to do, he talked about a civilian climate corps. And I don't know what that is, so I have questions about that. What would that look like? And so those things are the things that kind of concern me about where the election is going. If we're going to eliminate fossil fuels, how does ethanol fit into it? And how do we, as Iowa corn farmers, fit into a carbon neutral world?
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully it's not the folks that put together the Burger King advertisement that we saw yesterday. Michelle, as you look at this conversation, where do you sit on this as far as the way the conversation's happening, the way farmers are getting involved?
You know, I definitely agree with Tim. I was looking more into Biden's plan yesterday as well. And I think that Tim is right, as well as Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Energy Association, that, you know, we have a lot of room to be involved in that plan. I think that it has some good things for farmers. Obviously, we do have to be concerned about, you know, some of the regulatory issues or, you know, some of the other voices that could come in that are anti-American, especially animal agriculture. But I think that it really amounts to making our voice heard and being involved both on a local and national level. You know, because quite honestly, candidate Biden or even President Trump, you know, they need their senators, congressional members, they need the agencies to put together and actually enact those type of policies for the most part. And so we have to continue to tell our stories and be involved on a state and national level and talk to important policyholders about the benefits of ethanol, the benefits of, you know, our voluntary conservation measures, where we can work together with places. I think that, you know, there are certainly red flags out there on some of the environmental issues, but there's also a lot of things that I think we can positively impact and positively move the conversation in our direction.
Michelle, the trade issue, do you expect that to change much, you know, switching between candidates or no?
I would be hard pressed to believe that President Biden would leave on the metal tariffs, which I think would relieve a lot of pressure. Obviously, an immediate relief into China would be the metal tariffs, but we are still going to face the same headwinds. You know, if a president-elect Biden would have to put together USDR, he would have to put together his staff at USDA. It takes some time to develop new trade policy. That's not going to be immediate. So no, I don't think that changes immediately. Obviously, I think he would have a different approach to trade. He may not have a different approach to China, but I think he would have a different approach to trade, which may be more beneficial for agriculture. But the impact would be probably at best 9 months out, if not
you know, a little bit farther just from the nature of putting together your staff.
And Tim, we have seen some big announcements here in the last couple of days about big purchases out of China. Where do you sit on this whole reworking, you know, trade with a lot of our major partners?
Well, I think we as agriculture sit back and think, I can remember when USMCA at the end of last year, you know, was passed, we think, well, that's great news. The momentum, the market should be up. And, you know, the thing is just finalized July 1st. And, you know, have we seen positive results from it yet? It takes, I guess the point is, it takes a long time for these new and innovative trade policies to actually work its way down to our level. So, you know, I'm excited about China. I mean, they just made their third largest sale of corn. I think it was 123 million bushels ever. You know, it was third largest ever. So that's positive. Those are things we need to see more of. And I'm hoping, you know, this problem that we talk about with China is not a new problem. It's been going on for 25 years. You know, about the trade imbalance, about them taking our technology and hijacking it from us. So to correct that is a great thing. It's just not, it doesn't come as fast as what we as consumers, we're so used to having quick results. We're not going to have quick results, but long term, I hope that whatever administration's in charge after this election, we can continue to foster these good trade deals, because agriculture is going to rely on those trade deals going into the future.
Well, I appreciate you both for joining us. Great. Well said, both of you. And I know, obviously, we've got a lot of things to try to sort out here in the next less than 120 days between now and November. There's going to be a lot of conversations we're going to have, and we're going to learn more from both candidates about plans for the future. And I think that's where we need to get as people in agriculture. We've got to start trying to do our research. We've got to figure out the things that are important to us. And then we've got to get involved, as Michelle's been saying. I mean, go out there, have those conversations, join, with your leadership and the people in your home state, and let them know what's important and what you'd like to see worked on. Because regardless of, you know, who ends up in the White House or how the election goes, we want to be part of the conversation. And obviously, that's important. I appreciate you both being here on the Farmer Forum today here on AgriTalk. It's been a pleasure to sit in for Chip here for a couple of days. Of course, I know all of you are busy out in farm country. We appreciate you and what you do. Be safe. We'll talk to you again soon.